listening to the Wait, What If podcast.
Can you? Oh, Tim Sabers. There he is. There's Tim. I see him.
All right. Got him. Let me pull him up here.
Hooray.
All right. Good. Hey, Tim. How's it going? I'm Kevin.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Not bad. How are you?
Good.
First time I've met you. I've talked to Jeffrey a few times. Right. So before we get any golden, wonderful audio, let's just go ahead. You know what I'll do? I'll do all my intro and all that later, and then I'll edit it together, and I'll do, you know, through the magic of editing, make it sound really, really professional. So let's just get right into it. So I'm talking right now to Jeffrey Mark Klein. I added your middle name there.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And Tim Sabers. And they are, I would say you guys are a YouTube channel, but you get a bunch of things going on. So how do you define yourselves?
We define ourselves as a media company.
We're
focused on, comedy, culture, politics. You can find us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Gab,
and that's
all over the internet.
That's how I found you. I was actually, to be honest with you, I don't know how I found you. It's just, you know, you surf through YouTube, and I do that a lot lately because there's a ton of content out there. And I think, you know what's funny? Have you noticed that, like, if you start like surfing a certain topic, like through YouTube, and with me, I was just I could say kind of, but I'm obsessed with Antifa and that whole, like, it's crazy. So I liked watching videos of that. And then you start seeing the same people on other people's channels.
Yes.
And I'm not exactly sure which video caught my eye with you guys. It might have been one of your skits where you were hating women. And, and it was brilliant. So for the listeners, if you want to just start off and be here, where, you know, how can I get to know these guys? Go to their YouTube channel and check out their little videos there. They have one where I think, as the skit goes, Jeffrey gets a text from one of his friends that say, "Why did he support Trump? That means he hates all women." And then they go through and, well, I don't want to ruin it for you, but it's pretty good. How I found you guys. Now, I know you guys are out in LA and everything, but I was really impressed with the with your video quality. Like, somebody's got some chops there. I don't know which one of you does the editing and does all that writing and everything, but it's good.
The editing is Tim. The writing is me.
Okay. Nice job. And
thank you.
The dog, is the dog a prop or is he legit? Is Toaster like hanging out with you guys on a daily basis?
Toaster definitely was a real dog.
Okay. Oh, you said was. Sorry.
Yeah.
Nothing like pouring a little salt in the wound just to start things up. Well,
it's all good. It's only a few weeks old. It's fine.
Okay. Okay. Well, just lost the whole entire interview. No, I'm just kidding. All right. So, let's start from the beginning. What made you decide? So you said you're a production. No, do you call yourself a production company or media company?
Media company.
Okay. And give me the, where did you guys start this? How did you decide to start it? Because I understand you're in HR, right?
My like day job professional experience is human resources. Yeah.
Okay. And how about you, Tim?
My background is in media production. It's what I went to school for. I've been doing it. I decided I wanted to be a director when I was like 11, and I just kind of never stopped pursuing that. So So I moved out here about 7 months ago.
Oh, wow.
And met up with Jeffrey, and we just had very similar sensibilities. And it was during a time when if you were anything other than liberal, you were ousted by all your friends and called a Nazi, which is still kind of happening.
But that is. Yeah. It's a weird situation we're in right now.
Yeah. So we kind of bonded over that and just having kind of a mutual love of like old Simpsons and odd music and things like that. So,
cool.
You know, the way regular people become friends, I guess.
Yeah. And where did you come in from?
I moved here from Delaware, but I was born in New Hampshire, but I've lived mostly in the Northeast for most of my life.
Manchester or whereabouts?
I was born in a hospital in Manchester, but I lived in Derry.
Ah, oh my gosh. Guess what? I went to Pinkerton Academy.
I went to Pinkerton Academy for my freshman year of high school, and then I moved to Connecticut after that.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Yeah. I graduated though a few years ago. I won't get into when I did that, but wow, man, what a small world.
Yeah. And then great school. I was very sorry to leave it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the country's largest public private institution or whatever. And I'm more proud of my high school than I am of my undergrad alma mater. I went to University of New Hampshire.
Oh, okay. I went to Quinnipiac University, but I would say if I had been at Pinkerton for more than just that year, it probably would have been tough to top because I really enjoyed that school.
Yeah, really cool school. So you're out in New Hampshire. Well, anyways, you're on the East Coast, Delaware, wherever. And was it like just the fact that we are, I guess we'd call the climate of politics that we're in right now, that you said, you know what, I'm going to pull the trigger and do something different? Or what made you actually do that jump?
Yeah, I based on the political climate, coupled with the fact that Hollywood has just been like absolutely destroying the art of filmmaking over the past decade, I would say, maybe decade and a half.
Yeah.
I wanted to come out and before there was nobody here that was making films again and kind of disseminate some of that power away from Hollywood by trying to connect with people that were good and then hopefully moving to a state where you could actually get films made, because you know now people are moving to Georgia or up to Vancouver and things like that. So I wanted to move out and do something that was politically right and try and help. I noticed a kind of a movement happening where people from more conservative backgrounds were trying to build a alternate Hollywood, I guess, because there's very little path, it seems, for anybody to be openly conservative and work in the Hollywood system.
Yeah, you are more right than you could even imagine. I actually just watched an interview with David Mamet. I'm sure you're familiar with him, being a film buff yourself.
I love David Mamet. Yeah,
he's a really, really cool dude, and he just had one of those, I guess you could call it political come to Jesus moments a few years ago, where he's like, "What's going on? What's with this liberal, non-thinking, weird?" I think he called it the brain dead liberalism, and he
there was a piece he wrote for the Village Voice, I believe.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, yep.
I read that. Yeah,
I'll link to the interview. It's really good on the show notes on here. But yeah, and that's weird. I think I was just watching that today or yesterday. That's what I do when I'm not working. So you came out, you started based in LA. It's not that old, right? And I only noticed that you guys have only about three of these like actual produced videos. You have a ton of what would, I guess I would describe as, I come from the podcast world. So, video is very, you know, it's usually just all talk, you know, theater of the mind type of stuff. And I would describe it as audio or video podcasting, right? I guess you're a sort of commentary type of thing, 'cause you get a ton of stuff on there. Is it because of the time it takes to produce, something that's more, I don't know, skit type, or are you working on more things like that, more creative things, or?
It's a combination of a few things. Mm-hmm. For starters, it is the time it takes to accomplish it, but also the production, the money, there's a lot of factors that would go in. We have a bunch of sketches written, but we don't currently have the money to make a lot of them.
Okay.
So that's a big part of why we haven't made as many sketches as we would have liked.
Right, right. Okay, I get that. Your best content, though, I have to say, is just when you're out in the street and chatting with people. You had said something, Jeffrey, which I thought was brilliant, how you... Now I'm taking your quote here, all right? You said that you have the gay accent, so you can go behind enemy lines.
That is the truth, yes. I do say that, yeah.
And they... Basically, you can go... you know, where anyone else would be called out and be embraced. And then basically just, you know, you're not manipulating anyone. You're just having them talk to you about their views, which is got twofold. Number one, you really get an idea of what these people think and what these people feel. And two, it shows that, you know, people who are more conservative are willing to have a conversation. You know, we're willing to sit here and chat. Whereas, you get this monotone droning of "Get out of here! I don't want you to record me. Get out!" And it's like, and I find that now I try to stay. I try for my podcast. You know, it's more about the people, less about the politics. So I'll have, you know, anyone on board as far if they want to talk, and I try to stay away from that. But I do live my or wear my libertarian stamp pretty much on my sleeve. You know, it's obvious that I have more leanings towards conservatism. So, yeah, I just thought that you do a great job with that. Tell me about your experiences with it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my main experience really is the fact that I grew up in Michigan, blue okay. state, Midwestern blue, which is a fancy term for saying mostly Republican anyways. But I grew up in a blue state, moved to New York City, moved to LA. So I've always been surrounded by liberals.
Yeah.
And since I have this gay accent, liberals would gravitate towards me, especially liberal white women. Right. I don't know if you know this, but liberal white women love to stereotype gay guys.
There's a name for that, isn't there? I won't say it.
Yeah. I've been surrounded by liberals for most of my life. Mm-hmm. And so I understand them. I can speak their language very easily.
Okay.
And so, and since a lot of my friends are liberals, I genuinely care about them as people.
Sure.
And so it's very easy when surrounded by liberals for me to just be comfortable talking to them. But then, like you said, conservatives are comfortable talking to everybody and liberals aren't necessarily.
Well,
and so
that's
what we found.
Political discourse is disappearing. And I think it comes down to, so I have liberals in my family, old school liberals. You know, I think I called them when I sent you the email, the JFK liberals.
Yes.
Which when you look at them, it makes sense. You know, you don't hate them because their original intent was looking out for the little guy. You know, that was their right. job. They were workers. Most of them were workers, steel workers, whatever they were. And they wanted to take care of each other. And that's more of a liberal idea, you know, the collective taking care of everybody. And that, you know, that's okay. That makes sense to me. And I think you have to have that on one side of the spectrum. And then the conservatives on the other side, same thing. Conservatives or classical conservatives were small government, more libertarian, I think. And then you got this weird thing over the last, I don't know if it was a knee-jerk reaction from like the neocons of the late 90s and you know, with George Bush who were spending lots of money. I don't know what it was, but we had this like oil and water polarization that just sort of solidified after the last two administrations that people just don't want to come together. They don't want, basically what I just tried to say in a long way is, in the past, people had their differences, but they worked together. They saw the number one reason was, or the number one goal was to make the country a better place. Now it's, you know, get the out of my face, I'm going to hit you with the brick, and you know what I mean, and it's disgusting. Yeah. And it's really troubling.
Well, one of the things you just mentioned is talking about how liberals always were about taking care of the little guy,
right?
And the thing I definitely noticed over the last, I'll say 10 maybe 15 years, mm-hmm. is who defines who the little guy is. So you have the people on the right who say, let us take care of ourselves and our own. And if we choose to try to take care of other people, that's our freedom. And then on the left, you have people saying, well, if they're the little guy, I'm the little guy. Here's the thing about me that makes me the little guy.
Right.
I'm, you know, this type of minority. And now there's all these like all these minority types that I feel you can just sort of choose whatever yeah. your gender is or whatever. Yeah, and so you have all this, like, who's the little guy? Does the media determine who the little guy is? Cause we all know they can't really tell the truth anyways. Does the president say who the little guy is? Because our last president spent a long time telling everyone they're the little guy.
That's
and why
right.
we should all be against each other. And so you have all that. That's why I think the left is so angry, because they're like, when is it my turn to be the little guy? You can't call yourself the little guy because it undermines me being the little guy. And now who's taking care of me?
Yeah, it's the art of perpetual victimhood.
Yeah.
If everyone is a victim, then, and that's the other thing too. I guess what people used to do is they would, it's self-sacrifice, you know? That was part of it. There's a great movie, and here's a perfect example of the old school liberals. I think it was book two, Cinderella Man. Okay, fantastic. I used to box, love that movie. He was a classic liberal. I mean, this is during the Great Depression. He was a boxer. He felt horrible about having to go and take assistance. He didn't want to take the money, but he knew he had to because his kids were sick and he had to feed them and he couldn't work and things were just really bad. And then after he got his money, or after he became successful, he turned around and paid the money back. Which is, you know, I mean, that's the definition of liberalism. At least I think. I think it should be, you know. Everyone, you know, and as a libertarian, I guess this kind of, you know, doesn't sound right for me to say, but, you know, at some point, at some point, people need help, right? You don't want to be one of those people. And most people, you know, there's a bit of pride that you have to swallow in order to identify yourself as one of those people. And now it's just like, hey, no, I want to be one of those people. Give me money. Give me my Obama phone. Give me, you know, whatever I can get. And it's like, I don't know. And get myself worked up here. But
well, the issue just stems from, where do you expect to get your help from? Do you expect to get your help from the government who's taking money from other people? Or are you comfortable asking for help within your own community? Because that's the difference.
Right. And you see that, like, that comes down to the whole thing. You can force me to be charitable, I guess, or I can be charitable. You know what I mean?
That's not charity, though.
Yeah, no, it isn't. It isn't. You're absolutely right.
The thing that I think most liberals seem to not understand is the basic mathematics of taxing one individual $20 to help the guy down the street, but you have to pay all the administrators that have to take that money from that guy and then transfer it to somebody else. You have to pay them all a salary from tax dollars. So the sheer mathematics of the liberal welfare state works out to be less for everyone.
Yeah.
It's not really that hard to figure out. I don't understand why they continue to hold on to this when, you know, person-to-person charities, all of the person-to-person charities that are big in this country all started in the early 1900s. And they've proven to be much more philanthropic than the government, just because those people want to be there. It's all based on choice rather than force. You know, very few people wake up and go, I want to work in a low level government position.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of these social workers and stuff are really, it's kind of a last resort for some of the people that are working there. So you're getting people that don't want to do what they're doing, and it's charity. So it's just a kind of a disaster for everybody.
Yeah.
The sheer design of it all. Yeah.
Any criticism of the right, any criticism of the conservative side you want to air out?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely.
We can start.
So, tell me about this. And this is one of those new buzzwords that, again, I don't know. I don't know. I just want to get your ideas on it. What are your thoughts on the term, the alt-right, and the people that's trying to, I guess, label?
Well, the term the alt-right, I still struggle to understand exactly what it is, and that's only because my understanding of the alt-right continues to get watered down by what I hear so many people say about the alt-right, which I'm sure is everyone's confusion. But Milo Yiannopoulos wrote an article for Breitbart in, I think, early 2016 that literally defined the alt-right. And I don't know the racial politics of the alt-right, so I don't want to speak to it, but it really sounds like it's just younger people who are disillusioned by what the Republican Party has become, who were seeking literally an alternative to the right.
So you feel it exists. I know a lot of people say, come on, it doesn't really exist. It's just a buzzword or whatever.
Well, I've met people who identify as alt-right.
Okay.
Because at first, I'm with you, I didn't necessarily think it really existed, especially because I started getting accused of being alt-right a whole bunch, just because it's from the left, it's an insult. And on the right, it's like a fantasy word.
It's their equivalent of SJW, really. That's what they throw.
Essentially.
Yeah.
It's also, to them, it's like a modern way of saying Nazi. But they throw it around a lot. And like I said, I've met people who identify as alt-right, and they speak very eloquently about it. I just have never gotten on board, I guess, with the alt-right.
And then it's hard to pinpoint which groups are part of it. You know, you hear, you know, people throw the name Richard Spencer around, or they'll throw the name Milo, you know, I think if you could call someone the godfather of the alt-right, you would point to him, I would think.
You would want to, but in Milo's book, he even specifically says he was only called the like leader of the alt-right because he wrote an article explaining who the alt-right was. But he said the alt-right doesn't like him because of their anti-Semitic views, because of their, they consider homosexuality to be degenerate.
Okay.
And they're not a fan of race mixing. And Milo talks about liking black dudes.
Yeah.
So he says, he's like, the alt-right doesn't like me, but the left calls me the king of the alt-right. So someone's lying here.
Yeah, I never really looked at it that way. Is he Jewish too? I wasn't sure if he was Jewish.
He is. Well, he was born to Jewish parents, raised Catholic. So he's like, I kind of feel like he just holds on to the Jewish thing so we can like throw that out there to be like, I'm also Jewish. Take that left in your identity politics.
Well, yeah, because people expect, if they hear that you're Jewish, you're black, you're gay, you're whatever, they expect you to fall in line with where their definition of that person should be.
They sure do. Yeah.
And now that not only do they have their definition for it, they have definition for about 67,000 other groups that can fall into that. The Tumblr sexual identity section. Have you looked at that? Or I know someone keeps track of it.
I haven't looked because it drives my brain insane to just think about the fact that that people believe there's more than two genders at all, let alone labeling a whole bunch of different ones.
I sit there and I go on YouTube and I just watch some of these things like and I get just angry. My wife's like, why do you do that? Why do you continue to watch that? It's because it's like a train wreck. Politics nowadays, if you're not finding that, people who sit there and they're trying to find something to, you know, watch on Netflix, or they're bored or whatever, just take a look at the current political atmosphere. It is a freaking circus. And maybe the turbulent 60s had something like this, but they didn't have the ability to reach so many people. You know, you take individuals like me, I wouldn't have had a voice 40 years ago, 50 years ago. There's just no way. But now I have a radio show, that is international, right? How I'm just a regular guy. How is that even possible? Right. And that's true. I think that plays a huge role in it, because you start to see just the ability to organize and the ability to get your voice out there. Some of the voices I'd rather not get out there, but I guess, you know, they're obviously free to say what they want, but man, there's a lot of dog shit out there, a ton of it. And a lot of it's fun. I mean, and that's what I was, I guess, getting at, is that if you can't find entertainment in today's atmosphere, man, I don't know what would entertain you. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of this channel? And I'm going to say it wrong. It was like cut. They did the one recently about, it was parents talking about masturbation to their like 6-year-old kids. And it was
what was that?
It was horrible. But I started watching that channel, and all that channel is, it's a giant train wreck, and it's just pandering. It's pandering to anyone who identifies themselves as whatever. And making them special. And it's really, I don't remember the name of it, but you want to cringe. I mean, you just watch it and it's horrible.
Part of me wonders whether or not some of these things aren't farcical, because if the end game is just getting views, nothing gets views right now is going crazily in the left direction.
That's right.
And people hate watching stuff, you know? So, you know, part of me wonders how much attention we should even give some of these people. But of course that attention always dies off pretty quickly. Like, people watch one or two and then they're like, I can't support this anymore.
You only take so much.
Who, yeah. Right. So who knows? I mean, it, like you said, it's I think people are still adjusting to the fact that there's so many voices that that they can now tune into. I mean, the internet's the Wild West, and the media is just like, you know, you have all these small outlets popping up and competing with the big ones, but the distribution now, we're all on a level playing field, mm-hmm. you know, and mm-hmm. like you said, you're international, and it's a fascinating time to be a content creator, but it's even more frustrating when you're like, hey, I know my stuff is worth listening to and good.
Yeah.
And now I have to compete with about, you know,
yeah.
however many billion people that are on the same, you know, system that I'm on, trying to reach people and get some of their time. So
I had emailed Jeffrey about this. It's you got to define what success is for you in this. Otherwise you'll beat yourself up. You know, if having a good conversation with people, if ideas are getting out there and shared, and if, you know, if one show gets 10,000 downloads, fantastic. If one show gets 100, I mean, if you want to make money off it, it's not going to be the best thing, but at least you reach that 100 people. I mean, most people don't go and speak to 100 people, you know? Every 2 weeks, I'm speaking to thousands of people, and that's an outlet that... it's just fascinating. Technology has just made it completely possible for people like us to have a voice.
Absolutely.
And TV mm-hmm. channels. This whole thing too, the old guard media is freaking out. I think they're freaking out because...
Oh, of course.
Look what they did with... I'm going to say his name wrong. PewDiePie.
PewDiePie. Yeah.
That mm-hmm. was terrifying to some level. Because what does he have? Something like 55 million subscribers?
Something insane like that, yeah.
How many subscribers roughly. Do you think there are the Wall Street Journal? If you could take a guess, I would say, I don't know.
The Wall Street Journal? Yeah. I don't know,
500,000? Like, or do you think I'm jumping? Or do you think that's too high?
I would guess, I think that's too many decimal places. I would say in the 40,000 range would be my guess.
Yeah, because picture, they say whenever you do content, as you're talking, picture, and you're talking to your viewer, your listener, and that keeps you on, I guess, on task to reach out to the people that you're reaching out for. When you think of Wall Street Journal, I mean, I'm picturing retirees, people who still get the newspaper. I guess, does anyone do that?
Oh, old people
and
hipsters. I mean, when I think of the Wall Street Journal, I think of the type of person who reads it is the type of person who's owned the same recliner for decades in that recliner.
Yep.
That's all I can think of.
Or they have a bird and they need something to line the bird keeper. I have no idea. But and it's there are those people that are completely against technology and they're like, I can't do that. I can't get my news on a Twitter tweet. I gotta, and I mean, there's two problems with that. Well, one, you're only getting the Wall Street Journal's view of the world. And two, if you want to, I mean, you can be that way. My dad was that way. He's not anymore, but if you don't keep up with technology, you're not just putting off a gimmick, because the exponential growth of technology means if you don't learn one thing in 5 years, you're going to be just lost. You're going to be stone age because the way this stuff grows and the way that technology kind of begets technology, you can easily find yourself just not knowing what the hell's going on.
Right.
Which I feel like half the time anyways.
It's funny too that you say that. Like, you host a podcast,
right?
And you're like, I don't really get technology as well as other people. And it's like, you're light years ahead of so many people. And not just because you know the stuff, but because you take the time to actually do it.
Right.
Because so many people might know how to do it and are just like, I'm not motivated to do anything.
Yeah.
So it's great.
That is true. I mean, all I do is hit record and then upload it. It's what I find hard is, like you were telling me about Gab.
Gab.
It's what's difficult to me is trying to keep up with really ways to communicate with my audience. You know, I don't want to be left in the dust as far as that goes. But to get an audience, like, man, taking like your Twitter account and just trying to build an audience that way it takes so long. It takes years to get a good following on there, at least to drive people to that. And that really, I don't know about you guys, but I find I find Twitter being one of the main ways I get my content out there. If you guys know another way, I don't. What's your way? Like, where do you broadcast and say, "Hey, we got something else out here. Check it out." That was a question.
We still haven't worked out who should answer.
Oh, okay. Doesn't matter. Just talk over each other. It all works out.
being a duo, that's the only thing you have to figure out. We still haven't figured that out yet. But yeah. When it comes to broadcasting and stuff, for us personally, we're across all platforms, but of course now each app now has kind of developed its own type of stereotypical demographic. Like Facebook to me is more of an older, people 35 and older use Facebook. Whereas I'm finding now, I just spoke to my cousin's son and he's a senior in high school and I was asking him what apps he uses and stuff. And he's like, I never use a computer because he uses his phone if he's ever going to go online. And
yeah.
he's like, I don't really use things that much. I feel like the Generation Z, as they're calling them now, is a little bit more, they use the internet, but they look at it like the way most people would tell their kids to look at TV, which is it's all fake. It's all make-believe. Mm-hmm. Anything that's on there shouldn't be taken that seriously. And I think that too many people now look at the internet as like, oh, it's on the internet. It must be real. And I was the opposite is probably true.
Yeah, there's
just statistically.
I mean, anyone can make a website and make it look good and just write whatever the hell they want on it.
Sure.
Right. Which is okay. Absolutely. But, you know, you get an idiot that watches that or looks at that, and then you get... I mean, it's a good way to spread just bad information.
Even with after this past election, when Facebook was like, we're going to start cracking down on fake news websites. And I just remember so many people being like, I've seen people share articles from The Onion as though they're fact.
Oh, that happens all the time.
So it's like, what does Facebook consider fake news versus satire? And how do people discern what is what?
Well, therein lies one of the biggest problems of this whole, it's okay to punch a Nazi, or it's, hate speech and all that stuff, because someone has to define that.
And, of course.
And we all say, hey, it's ridiculous to say that if you're just making any sort of political commentary and you're not inciting violence, it's ridiculous to have any fear that we would call that hate speech. But no, I mean, you can just look at the past and look at the present, look at North Korea, and you see how people are any sort of free speech is just squelched by these weird rules that someone makes up. It's all subjective.
Right. It's true. I mean, the question is, like you said, who defines what hate speech is? Is hate speech speech you hate?
Right.
Because if hate speech is speech you hate, then that's hate speech to you. What's hate speech to me? So it's so ethereal. I don't know how you could actually define it.
There is a really shocking lack of, I guess civics we'll call it, knowledge of... basically knowledge of our country and our culture that could exist, but we're afraid to embrace it. So what I mean by that is we should consider ourselves a revolutionary country, right? We started from a revolution. We started with the idea of personal freedom and our ability to govern ourselves. The modern, I don't even know how I could describe it. Maybe the millennials. Are you guys millennials? I don't know. I would assume.
Technically, yes.
Okay. Mm. It seems that they don't understand that it's in our blood to be able to say whatever we want. It's in our blood. It should be. It should be part of our very nature, where other countries say, what the hell is going on with America? Why are they doing that? And we should embrace it and say, it's because that's who we are. You know, we have this thing called the Bill of Rights. We have this, these freedoms, which other countries, I mean, even Canada, not far from us, don't have these freedoms. You can be arrested in Canada. Right. There was a band arrested for singing Kung Fu Fighting. Did you ever hear that story?
What?
Yeah.
I never heard that story. That's a great song.
Look up Band. I don't know what happened. They probably weren't arrested. They were fined or whatever. Maybe they were arrested. I don't know. But they were singing Kung Fu Fighting, and it wasn't culturally sensitive. So I guess young generations look at Europe and look at that and say, hey, you know, that is, they're nice over there. You know, they're protecting people, and I can do that. And I don't know if it's a failure of us teaching kids that, no, that's not who we are as a country. I don't know. What are your thoughts on it? Either one. I'll point to you.
I can't tell where you're pointing.
I know. I was joking.
I was like, Tim, you take this one.
Oh, wait, what was the question? What's the question again?
So basically what I was getting at is, I don't even remember what the question was. Why do you think that people, or I guess the younger generations, aren't embracing the core values of our country? Gun ownership, another perfect example. We have a generation of kids that scream when they see a gun.
My first thought would be because we all go, the majority of people go to government run schools to be taught things. And government, as it's gone now, they have the federal government has been running, or, you know, issuing a one size fits all, educational type program for all these people across, all these states. And I just think that's where, I mean, the government as an institution develops its own interests, and its interest is to continue to feed itself and get bigger and tell everybody that it's a wonderful thing that will take care of them. Whereas, you know, when the country first started, there was no government education. And yet look at the growth that happened with one room schools and people that were just kind of doing apprenticeships and things of that nature. I just feel like this, in an effort to level the playing field amongst all the citizenry by teaching them all the same things, mm-hmm. you're denying yourself these idiot savants, or the Mozarts and the Einsteins and these individuals that might completely completely fail in a group setting and need kind of more nuanced teaching. As we were talking about before, Pinkerton is a half private, half public institution, which it was run very well, in my experience, because they could take whatever stance best suited the individual situation that they were dealing with that particular student at that particular time.
That's right.
Whereas now you have something like, the Abed, the clock boy, who brings in a clock to school, but he has to be treated according to a particular set of criteria that is passed down from a government entity that has no interest in that particular situation. So everybody there had to go through their particular, he brought something to school. Somebody said it's a bomb. Then you have, I said once when I was in middle school, said something, when I was 12 or 13, something violent towards a teacher, but I was at a private school. So they just dealt with it. Just me and that teacher talked about it, mm-hmm. about what I was saying. Were you really threatening this person? Were you not? And that's the type of thing you can get at a private institution. Whereas as soon as the government is involved, now there's this whole hierarchy and you have 18 people up a chain that I'll have to put their mark on a particular situation and justify the reason that they have their position and why they get, why they get their salary. So for me, I think the reason that we have so many people that don't understand the government itself is because the government itself is making people start to think that the government should be the top. And right. that we as the people are the bottom. Whereas as a libertarian, I'm sure you agree with this, that it's the Constitution and the whole system that we exist in was designed to be changed from the bottom up.
That's right.
So, to me, it's really a ruling class versus, the people. I don't really look at it as parties or anything like that. It's those who want to rule and those who don't want to be ruled.
Even everything you just said, there is a a generation of people that would have listened to that and say, what is he talking about? bottom up, people don't realize that our central government, I mean, our federal government, it gets its authority from the states. We grant right. the government to do what it does, but we hold it, you know, at arm's length because we're again, we should have a culture of, I guess, skepticism towards any centralized government. I mean, that's how we were born. We were born at throwing off a monarchy. And I think that culture is just lost. And I don't know if it's ever going to come back. I had brought up guns before because, you know, any way you feel about guns, there's Europeans could never understand what guns mean to us. They just can't.
Right.
They say, why would you, I mean, look over here. There's my niece, but there's a gun on the wall there. But I mean, it's not only part of our culture, but it's in our blood to be able to, and they always say, well, you'll never be able to overthrow our government. Maybe that's the case. Or maybe it's the case we wouldn't be able to fight against, you know, a modern army. And again, you know, maybe the Iraqis did it pretty damn well against us. Right. I was there. I could tell you about it. But I don't know. Basically, what I'm just getting at is I don't know if we're afraid to have a culture, but we don't have it, and people just aren't understanding why those of us who embrace a culture actually do.
Speaking to the gun argument is, you know, everybody talks about how like, oh, we live in a different, you know, we live in a different time. And the people back then, all they had was, you know, single shot muskets that took, you know, half a day to load for one shot or whatever
right,
it was.
Right.
And they always talk about how, oh, you know, that's what they were talking about. And I was like, well, if firepower is the issue to most people on the left as to why we shouldn't be allowed to have, you know, automatic weapons or things like that. And I was like, then why didn't they say you're not allowed to have cannons?
Right.
Because cannons existed. The firepower has nothing, if we were a nation of tank owners, then we'd be even safer and we'd all have tanks, you know, even less people would want to do anything with us. The gun thing is a very strange thing, but it's been around since forever. I was reading a while back that in 1611, the Pope, I think it was Pope Innocent II, tried to put a ban on, or did successfully put a ban on the crossbow. Like people weren't allowed to own the crossbow. Mm-hmm. And it's the same exact kind of AR-15 type argument. Like, oh, well, you don't need something this powerful. We'll decide how much firepower you actually need. But, you know,
it's... And what's the point of that? The point is to prevent a bunch of people being able to take over your right, government.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Second Amendment specifically talks, the Second Amendment, from what I remember, specifically mentions the right of the people to have a militia to ensure a free state, as right. well as the right to keep and bear arms.
Yeah. And that's one of
people forget why the Second Amendment exists. The Second Amendment exists so we as individuals can protect ourselves and our interests mm-hmm. in case someone more powerful than us tries to oppress us, take away any of our other rights in the Bill of Rights or anything like that. And Tim mentioned muskets. When the Second Amendment was written, yeah, sure, people had muskets. The government also had muskets.
Right.
Now the government has more than that.
Yeah.
So why don't we get to have, you know, fighter jets? And like Tim said, we should be a nation of tank owners. I would love to be a tank owner.
Nukes, individual like, nukes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. In theory, I can't remember who it was. There's an example of someone who wrote one of the founding fathers. It might've been someone wrote Adams or I'm just talking out my ass now, but whatever it was, is the guy said, I think he was a shipping magistrate or something. And he wrote to the government and said, hey, I know we have the Second Amendment. Can I outfit my ships with cannons? And his response was like, Yes. Why would you ask that? Of course you can. You have the right to keep and bear arms. I wish I remembered that document's name, but yeah, I mean, it just goes to show you that the founding fathers were thinking of, well, because, you know, it's 250 years ago for us, but these guys lived it. They lived the revolution. They understood that this was a very, very serious thing. And, you know, yeah, a decade from when they ratified the Constitution, it could have melted away. You know, they had to, the people had to be able to keep and bear arms. And there's no reason to think that it's wrong today. I mean, there's no reason to say that, okay, that was the past. It's a dead document. Now we're much more European-like, and we, I don't know. And that's, and I feel like that's the argument against it.
I mean, potentially. The argument I hear the most is that mental health is overlooked in this country and too many crazy people get guns. Right. That's the argument I hear the most about gun regulations.
Just if they want to talk about that, just drive down the road and look at the people driving cars.
Right, of course. You're more likely to be hit by a car than shot by anyone in your entire life.
And there are crazy people driving.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it's insane. And you can do more damage with a car than you can with most guns.
Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, we've learned that with France and all that.
Yeah.
What do you think, and anyone can answer this, you can jump on it. What do you think, you know, that we're talking about this, what do you think the future holds of something like the First Amendment? Do you think, and this, I guess, is more of theoretically, are you a pessimist or are you an optimist over, say, the next 25 years that someone won't step on our right to free speech?
I'll preface this by saying generally in life, I'm an optimist and Tim is a, I guess, cynic is a nicer way to say pessimist.
Okay, yeah, but I get that.
I believe that if people try to actually threaten the First Amendment in the U.S. in any real legislative way, I think that would wake up enough people to come together and prevent it from actually happening. Like, I don't think we're going to do something as asinine as Canada making it literally illegal to criticize Islam. Like, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that would go through anywhere. I think the Bill of Rights is going to be safe because the people will keep it safe.
Tim, what are your thoughts?
I agree with Jeffrey for the most part. I think that one of the things that I think everybody needs to keep in mind is like what we were talking about is now everybody has a chance to voice their opinion. So sometimes I struggle with like, are we having a conversation about the First Amendment because it's going, you know, because it's under attack? Or are we having a conversation about the First Amendment because we can actually have conversations now with people, you know, all over the country and with this kind of ease, like what we're doing right now? Okay. Sometimes I wonder, are we all just buying into our own hype, you know, because now we have this whole new independent media, you know, popping up online and now we're going through our own kind of cyclical fashion waves of like, oh, everybody's talking about this now, but then in a year's time we might all be talking about something else, and there's a new, you know, the news cycle is now something that the average regular Joe not only has an effect on, but it has an effect on them in the sense that what they're choosing to listen to might be one little bubble on the internet, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh wait, you know, the majority of people don't, I guess they're not talking about that, but the majority of the people that I talk to on the internet are talking about a particular subject. So I'm still kind of, I'm hopeful in the fact, in the sense that the people seem to kind of rise up and push back. I mean, as you know, the last election kind of proved that. You know, whatever people's stance on Trump is, I think everybody was kind of united in his take on, not united, but the majority of the people on the right, you know, libertarians, Republicans, and independents, and even, you know, most thinking Democrats, were all for, couldn't possibly be against his notion of this PC culture is out of control, and it's getting to the point where it's now just a censorship culture. And, you know, so yeah, I guess I'm optimistic.
Okay. I was
that way.
I was going to ask, preface that to, or add on to that. Do you think it could turn violent? But then you guys have been, were you over at Berkeley when the Battle of Berkeley?
We happened? Sure were. Okay. Yeah.
So
we were live on YouTube. You can watch it.
That's right.
Watch me get, beat up a couple times.
Really?
To see that from a selfie angle. It's terrifying. Wow. Yeah, of course.
So
yeah.
tell me about that. I mean, people have heard about the Battle of Berkeley, I guess. And it did.
You would think people have heard about the Battle of Berkeley.
That's right. But people who are in the know, people who tune into something other than CNN or MSNBC or something have heard about it.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, what happened? It was a few days, right?
So it was one day. It was April 15th. We went up because I was invited to speak. Because it was a free speech rally. That's what it was.
Right.
It was just a rally to celebrate the fact that we have free speech, much in the same vein as like the Women's March on January 21st. We were like, let's remind everybody that this is a thing also. So we were just having a free speech event. I was invited to speak, and we went up there, and you mentioned Antifa earlier. Those toddler terrorists with their black masks and violent tendencies showed up, brought a ton of weapons. We were unarmed because the police told us we weren't allowed to bring weapons. And if you tell a bunch of conservatives the police said to do something, we all just comply because we're good law-abiding citizens. And so we were unarmed. They had, you know, M80s and bricks and bike locks and poles and sticks, and it was absolutely insane. It devolved into literally just like a street brawl. And it was something that I think most people in 2017 would never assume they would come near, let alone be in the thick of.
Right.
So it was absolutely crazy.
Would you define it more as a tantrum, or was it, did it sound and feel like, and I guess you weren't in Egypt when Egypt had the revolution, but did it have the feeling that, man, this could get bad really, really quickly?
Well, I've never been in any kind of a war zone at all.
Right.
I believe I come across as very soft because I am. but early on in the free speech event itself, they were throwing M80s into the crowd of people at the free speech rally. And when someone explained to me what an M80 could do if it actually hit one of us, it became terrifying because the sound, it sounds like what on TV a bomb going off sounds like.
Isn't it like a quarter and stick of dynamite or something? Or is that like,
yes, it is a quarter of the strength of a stick of dynamite. Wow. And we know that dynamite can be used to cut through mountains to make railroads. We all learned that, I hope.
Yeah.
But so M80s were being thrown in, and at first I was like, oh, that's like a boom. Cause like, I remember like cannons being set off on Memorial Day at the parade when I was growing up. So I didn't think the sound was that bad till someone explained it to me. And then it became actually scary. And then I was surrounded by all these people on our side, and we were surrounded by all the bad guys essentially. And I guess like adrenaline kicked in, and I was like, I'm going to go to the front because we're live on YouTube and I'm going to like document this.
Sure. Yeah.
And then it became actually scary when they started throwing rocks, like rocks the size of like a head of cabbage. I got hit in the shoulder with one of those.
Wow.
At one point, a friend of mine named Antonio pulled me back by the collar of my shirt and pointed out to me that there were two guys walking towards me, one with a huge rock in his hand and one with a U-shaped bike lock in his hand. And they were actually trying to hit me on the head with them.
That wasn't the bike lock guy that got arrested, was it?
So I don't want to say it was the same bike lock guy, but on our Facebook page based in LA, we got a series of Facebook messages from a, you know, those like brilliant people on the internet who are like,
oh,
100%
yeah,
autistic.
Yep.
He had screenshots and just like timestamp statements, paragraphs long, from watching a bunch of different live streams from the Battle of Berkeley, letting me know all these different points at which I was in danger.
Oh, wow.
And this was after the fact, of course.
Yeah.
And it was, like knowing that in hindsight made it a little bit scarier, obviously.
Sure.
But like all that was going on. I don't know if it was the same bike lock guy, but it was a bike lock person.
There, you have to be partially psychotic to want to hurt somebody that bad. I mean, especially when you're not threatened. It's just about politics, but I want to put a rock through your head. I mean,
right. I mean, I would want to say that you'd have to be psychotic. And again, I don't want to like sound like I sympathize with Antifa in any way, but I will say they were covered up, sunglasses, hoods up, masks over their faces. And then you get into this combination of like mascot mentality that's like, no one can know who I am, so I am free to do whatever I want. Mm-hmm. Coupled with this mob mentality of like, all the people around me are screaming, like, these guys are Nazis, get these Nazis off our streets, punch Nazis. And so they get all hyped up and literally try to attack us. And so I'm not saying what they did is in any way justified, but I'm saying I can see how a person that would otherwise be normal.
Yeah.
Could get to that point. Now, then you have to ask yourself, like, how normal is it to put the mask on and go to the event in the first place? Of course, but that's how I can see a normal human devolving into being that type of a terrorist, essentially.
Mobs are just in general a scary thing. Yeah. Did you see the guy? Maybe you know him because, like I said at the beginning of this, when you go onto everyone's channels, you start recognizing faces, and it seems like you guys go. At least you show up to a lot of the same events. This one guy went with a bunch of Pepsis, which I think you did on one of your shows. I believe you. Yeah, yeah.
I took Pepsis to the Battle of Berkeley in my backpack to like try to hand them out.
But yeah,
I was too scared to do anything with them.
This guy who did it—he's a big guy, got a beard.
Baked Alaska? Didn't he do that?
Maybe.
Baked Alaska has a video of him trying to hand Pepsis to people.
It might. Is he kind of a fat guy with a beard? And
I mean, he has a blonde beard.
Okay, no, this isn't.
I wouldn't describe him as fat at all, though.
Yeah, no, this guy is. I want to say he's Hispanic. Maybe, I don't know, but. Yeah, he was hysterical. He took at one point they were pushing a dumpster down the street, and he was picking up like broken glasses and stuff, and saying, "Okay, everyone, we're just going to make a lost and found over here," and he put it up on top of the dumpster. It's hysterical. I'll put the link on the show notes. In fact, we were talking last night. I was showing my brother-in-law, and I was like, "Yeah, I'm going to call this guy. I got to get him on the show because he went with Pepsis," and as people were like, you know, taking bats to each other, he'd be like, they need me. And he'd grab a soda and run in there and be like, try to get it into them. And then he's like, and then he had like the, sad music as the cans were being stepped on or whatever. He was great. I wish I could give him a shout out, but I can't remember. Of course I didn't write down his name.
That's exciting.
I was going to say in light of that, those activities that you see going on. First off, why do they cover their faces? Do you know this?
They cover their faces so their identities don't get shown because they're afraid of the conservative mindset. Well, they're afraid of the brilliance of people on the internet,
okay, like
4chan and Poll and all those people, because they don't want to get doxxed, which would be just their information leaking on the internet. And then I think also they cover their faces because they hate the police,
mm-hmm,
because they believe that the police love murdering black people. So they hate the police and they don't want the police to see who they are, so they can't get arrested.
Okay.
And that's my understanding. I don't know if there's any like deeper meaning.
What's funny about it, or ironic, I guess you could say, is that when you identify yourself as this on the side of righteousness, yet you can't show your face, so you obviously have some sort of guilty feelings towards what you're doing.
Yeah,
go ahead.
The other thing I have noticed at all the rallies that we've gone to, which I think I'm gonna have to put into kind of a video essay, is you have all these people on the left that are kind of anti-corporate structure, don't like big business, don't like big money behind politics and stuff, and you go to these rallies and you look at the right, and it's a bunch of all you have to do is look at the two groups, and on the right you see a bunch of goofballs in red, white, and blue, various signs that are all handmade with outfits that are just like, you know, thrown together and kind of silly looking. And then you look at the left and you look at like the refuse fascism signs are all printed off. They all look exactly the same. They all have the same slogans, and they all are wearing essentially a uniform when they're dressed as Antifa and stuff. And I was like, any third party observer is going to look at these two groups and go, that group has a bunch of organization and money behind it, and the other is a gathering of individuals that are like minded. That it just looks like grassroots. It looks like bottom up versus top down to me, you know, because as most people know in the know, that George Soros money is kind of being pumped into every single one of these things on the left. And it's very obvious. I just look at the two groups and I go, all those people have the same Xerox signs and clipboards, and it looks like they have, you know, a lot of organization and a lot of thought process behind everything they're doing. And I was like, and the other group looks like just a bunch of individuals that all showed up sort of at the same time.
That's right. There's this, the middle America, the ones who voted for Trump and elected him president, it seems, and it, you know, they call them the silent majority, but they are the almost the forgotten population. So I thought what was funny was when he won the election, they showed it was starting to tilt towards Trump. People had this air of what happened, you know, like after Hurricane Katrina or Sandy, like they're on the beaches going, we didn't see this coming. How did this happen? And they're trying to, you know, they had shows about how this happened and what it happened because people freaking voted for him. You know what I mean?
Right.
There's no mystery to it. It's right. that people voted him in, and and they still don't understand that. They don't understand that. And I think it's going to be the death of them because they don't realize that we're still listening. And
of course. Well, the other thing because not only did people vote for him, but a lot of people who voted for him didn't feel comfortable sharing prior to the election that they were going to vote for him, because some people are very sick of being called a misogynist or a bigot or a homophobe or a racist simply because they support a political candidate for whatever their personal reasons may be. And some people are sick of just being dismissed for their political views just because people don't agree with them.
Right. What I always thought was amazing or brilliant, maybe in the other sense, because I'm sure there's people that are falling for this, is this whole act of subconscious racism or so basically you can live a good life, you know, you can treat everyone equal, you can you know, just live the life that you're supposed to be living, and yet you too could be a secret racist. And you know, even though you might even be married to a black person, but you could have it inside of you, and you need to answer for that. And I say it's brilliant because it takes a post, and I guess you can call this a post-racial society, a society that people are, the market's doing all right, a lot of people are working, we had a black president. I mean, most people aren't sitting there and waking up and going, look at all the races, let's fight this out. Most people just want to get through their day. And that doesn't pay off. That doesn't pay off for politically. So to take those people and say, you know, no, you still are a racist. And everything, you drove that car to work? Well, how did you get that car? You have a job? Oh, that's all because of racism. And it perpetuates the problem. It doesn't come up with an answer. Because what is the answer? What is the answer? You know, if it's a subconscious racism, so you're racist even if you're not racist, how do you fix that? You know, what's the end game?
You don't. All you straight white males just have to deal with the fact that you're all racist forever, and that's you can't win anymore.
That's right.
That's the end game of the left, I think.
Yeah, I've never understood that. You know, that they were like, you know, who we should pick a fight with? The one group of people that have never lost a fight.
Right. That's right.
Everything throughout history has always been won by some group of white men, you know what I mean? As far as I can tell, at least my understanding of history, there's a few losses, I guess, here and there, but for the most part,
I would also venture to guess that we're a minority in the world.
white men.
Yeah, straight white men would have to be. Yeah. I mean, it would have to be just because. I mean,
the sheer number of people in Asia or elsewhere. Yeah, I get that's the thing that I don't understand is how are we defining white?
Yeah,
because it seems to be the only group where it's just that's okay to call a color.
Yeah,
whereas like I'm like I tell people I'm half Latvian and nobody even knows it's a real country, which is like you know to me I'm like well you know shouldn't you. Shouldn't you know? You know, shouldn't you know this? It's kind of like the left calls people Asian Americans, and I'm like, you know, who finds that insulting? Chinese people, Japanese people, Koreans. I was like, because you're basically saying I can't tell you apart. We'll just throw you. We'll just lump
that's
you
right.
as Asian.
That's right.
You know, same with like you know, quote unquote Native Americans. I'm like, well, why don't you learn the difference between Navajo and Iroquois and Apache? And,
yeah.
You know, but, you know, nobody wants to do that. They like to take the whatever the left seems to choose in terms of terminology. That seems to be what's OK. And the reason that happens is because they control the media. So many of them control the media. So they control the conversation and have been for such a long time, which now that's not happening anymore. I mean, to me, the conversation on the Internet is really going vastly in the other direction. Yeah. Or at least more centrist. Maybe it's evening out now. But you know, and the old media outlets are relatively you know relatively leftist. Just because I feel like left leaning people tend to value the arts and teach their kids. You know, it's okay to go into the arts. Whereas people on the right are like, that's not serious. Go to school for business or do something that's more. You know, that's more, you know, product, like a product service type of thing that you're going to offer to sell to people. So I think that is kind of a negative on the right is that people tend to look at the arts or communications as less than. And now I think people are finally starting to realize, oh, you know, something we have to get involved in these conversations. We might need to go out and protest occasionally or counter protest just so that there's at least some other hat in the ring, you know, far as I can tell.
I think the power of the vote is one of the best protests out there. You know, love them or hate them. And I think anyone who doesn't identify themselves at either extreme of the political sphere, personally, after all the shit I've watched in the last 20 years of American politics, this guy's going in there and he's just burning it down. And people say, oh, why don't they take away his Twitter handle? Why, man? Keep tweeting. Yeah. Just bring this house down.
I love his Twitter. His Twitter's my favorite. I mean, there are two things I love about his Twitter. Mm-hmm. One, we have a president who's hilarious. Yeah. And that's great. The fact that my president is like a goofball and he tells jokes, like I want that in a president. But the other thing I love about his Twitter that nobody talks about is his tweets literally tell you what he's up to.
Yeah.
I'll see on his Twitter that he's like talking to Saudi Arabia today.
Yeah.
I'll be in Wisconsin tonight. Like he just says that. And I'm like, I know what the president's up to. And you look back, I mean, we only have one other president who's been on Twitter, but we look at his Twitter and all of his tweets are like carefully crafted.
Yeah, he didn't write those tweets.
A link to a .gov website. And it's like, no, just like type it out.
Yeah,
just send out a meme, say something ridiculous, give us a hint about what bombshell you're going to drop on us in a couple weeks, mm-hmm. and then tell us where you're going to be today. It's the best.
He's burning it down, and it's to be able to watch. Great. It's almost like you picture like a real fancy party, and everyone's in a black tie, and this guy comes in Bermuda shorts and a I don't know tank top, and it's just like reaching into. It's just like I don't know. They say may you live in. Go ahead.
He's like Rodney Dangerfield.
He is. He absolutely is. And you know they say, oh, that's not right for the leader of the free world. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. But if anything, I am really interested in seeing what the next 10 years of politics is going to be like. If people are going to take any lessons from this, if there's going to be maybe the pendulum's just going to swing hard in the other direction. I don't know, but. I like
wait. Our next president's going to go live on Periscope all the
that's
time.
Right. That'd be cool. I'd watch it.
I would love to watch just presidential live stream of him just like do it like in a meeting, like, shh, guys, don't, like, Bannon doesn't want me to do this. And then he just like sets his phone up and is just like talking to some like African king. I think it's amazing.
Do you think he ever tweets on the toilet?
Oh yeah, duh. I don't see why not.
That's a great thing to. Oh God. Oh no. Go ahead.
That's an interesting thought.
No, yeah. Leader of the free world. Yeah. So what, you know, considering where technology is going, considering what's the future of Based in LA? What is your ideal, I guess, future of Based in LA? Where do you see this media project going?
Well, Tim, you go first.
I was just going to explain kind of that Based in LA was kind of the local brand, but we're trying to move to more Based was going to be just the brand itself. And what we'd like to do is to, you know, there's so many commentators and artists that are now popping up that are more conservative leaning, or people that are doing the types of videos that or podcasts that we're doing, where it's either man on the street or it's just, you know, giving their take on the news or just kind of reporting on what's happening. And then there's many straight journalists yet. There's a lot of activists,
right?
But I would like to get, we know a couple of people that are more, I just want to go out and document what's happening, which I think people need more of. But ultimately, we'd like to move towards eventually creating an app that is essentially kind of like a channel where it's you know, it's a variety of opinions and voices and content, but it's all aimed at not just conservatives, but people that are a little bit kind of tired of being told what they are or aren't allowed to say or do. Mm-hmm. Because I think, you know, you have people like, you know, Mark Zuckerberg thinks he can run the country for some reason, and he wants to run for president. And it's like, you are a nerd from Harvard who started a site that started as a way for people to connect after they met at bars. Like, yeah. and now you think you're like some sort of, you know, forward thinking, like, you know, savior. It's strange to me that, but I bring him up because now he's just censoring things he doesn't like on his
right.
platform.
Right.
And, I would like to start a platform that takes a hard stance on not censoring anybody and being upfront about that to the viewers and just being like, we don't censor anything, except for maybe pornography, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's it. But the future is to build a talent pool in the same way that a record label would build a talent pool of bands and find people that want to create and want to be in control of their content, and then essentially become a platform where they can, where we build an audience that's a joint audience, because right now there's a lot of people that are going at it alone, which I think is great. But I think the first thing is you have to kind of build a big network and a big company, and then have a plan down the road where you can split the company into smaller companies once it reaches a certain point. I'm one of those people that listens to people say, oh, our business plan is essentially do something successfully for 5 years and then sell our company to Google. I was like, what, aren't you, if you're against monopolies, then you have to not do that. So, as somebody who's against putting too much power in one place, I'd like to have a business model that allows the content creators to be in control of their content, and then allow them all to build an audience together, and then go off and start their own independent company from there, which, you know, whether or not people are into that is another question, because some people, you know, don't want to be entrepreneurs and be content creators. It's not easy, but that's essentially where we're working. But if all that fails, that's okay, because we're working on writing scripts and stuff, Jeffrey, the two of us. We're
yeah.
Writers.
I was gonna say the ultimate goal has always been to be filmmakers. Like, that's what we've been, that's where everything sort of stemmed from.
Right.
And yeah. So like building the network, sure, is like a thing we're working on that's gonna help us build connections and build an audience and sort of get a stronger sense of the pulse of where things are going culturally, in terms of entertainment, in terms of what works and what doesn't, and then, I mean, make films. Tim's a fantastic filmmaker. He's got an amazing film online. I'm a writer. I do stand up. So like, our hearts are there truly, but like, based in LA itself is a wonderful thing we created, and we're trying to grow it effectively.
Now that we've kind of shot ourselves in the foot by ever being able to work in Hollywood the way it is now, we figured we might as well build our own company just in case. Yep. So we have a place to work, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. Of course. I mean, the greatest thing that could ever happen is for someone to make the statement that Tim and or I am blacklisted in Hollywood, so we can use that publicity to be like, hey, the rest of America, do you want these cool guys to come make films where you are? Because we will.
Yeah, if you're cool enough to get blacklisted, man, that's a step. Did you ever watch the documentary about Roger Stone? It's on Netflix.
I feel like somebody just suggested this to me.
Yeah, the other day. Yeah. Me too. Is that, it's like new, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's great because he was a young guy during the Watergate scandal, and you know, maybe in his 2021 or something like that. And he talks about how he was watching the hearings on TV, and they had a list of all the people that received money and all that, and people who were within this giant conspiracy, and his name was on the bottom, and he was like, oh, I made it. It was really cool.
That's great. Oh, I love it.
Well,
that's cool.
One of the other tricky things, and I find that with my podcast, podcasts are kind of, they're very defined, and there's, you know, you can picture when people are listening to it. They're either on a treadmill or driving their car. It's very, very specific. What I have trouble doing is, where do you imagine like what the next platform is going to be? You know, it's almost impossible. And we used to say, you know, 10 years down the road, this will be, you know, the platform or whatever. But now it's like, you know, in 5 years, I can guarantee you that we're going to be saying, wow, I did not see that coming.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, the next platform is whatever platform an innovator creates and catches on.
Right.
So the next platform could be anything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like the next mode of transportation was a car. The next form of communication was a telephone. Like, someone just has to think of it.
Yeah.
It's very exciting.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty crazy. Well, guys, I really, really thank you for spending your time, giving us a lot of good info, good conversation tonight.
Fantastic.
Folks can find
you.
Hey, no problem. Folks can find you guys at Based in LA on Twitter. Where should we drive the listeners? Is it the YouTube or is it?
Yeah, our YouTube is where basically everything we create starts.
Okay.
And then it's shared and communicated on Facebook, Twitter, Gab. Yeah.
Okay.
So I would encourage people to go to youtube.com/basedinLA.
Okay.
And now we just started setting up a Discord the other day. I don't know if you're on Discord yet or anything.
No, I got to check out Gab and Discord now. You guys are going to be homework.
Yeah. The Gab is easier to figure out how to use than Discord. I will forewarn you on that one. I've been using Discord for a couple of months, and I still just have a lot of questions.
Yeah, actually, now that you say that, is this something like you set up a server or something?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, I found myself there.
Yeah, Discord was created to be a more effective centralized location for gamers who play online together to communicate, as opposed to using in-game communication servers, because almost all of them are terrible.
Okay. Yeah. You've already lost me. I'm like, what the hell? I'm not that old. I never got into gaming, so I guess
okay,
that's kind
it's
of
for nerds.
Yeah.
Discord is essentially it's as best as I can understand, because I'm new to it. I've only been on it a couple of days, but it's essentially like when the internet first started and people were like, oh, chat rooms.
Yeah.
it's a bit like that, but you also have the ability to actually do audio back and forth in a big group. So
okay,
it's interesting. We'll see where it goes, but I think it could be a pretty strong force in terms of meetup area. Certainly. For people.
And last question, and it's only, is more of a personal one, because I don't know what's going. What is with based, like based Stickman, based in LA? What does that mean?
Oh yeah, Tim, I want you to do this one.
Well, I mean the original term was kind of a ghetto like Ebonics term. As far as I can understand, is like based started as a term that's just like someone said I'm based, as in I'm not interested in apologizing for the way I feel about particular things. I don't need to explain myself to anybody. But then it became people who were based were like, the most base thing you could do is say, I support Donald Trump and I voted for Donald Trump and I don't care what you think. So now it's become a term for people who are essentially woke or red pilled, you know.
Okay.
These are terms that are flying around, but yeah. The term based is essentially it's just for people who are, it's kind of the new punk, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. To put
it a certain way. And as somebody who grew up in New Hampshire and you know, discovered punk from somebody at Pinkerton. I've always had that kind of anti-authoritative mindset, and it's just kind of never left me. So I guess based is kind of the new term for being punk, as far as I can tell.
Wow. Yep. Yeah. It's just not caring what anybody thinks.
Okay.
Right.
It's great.
Well, now I know what it is. And everyone's using it. Everyone has it as their, it's like based to this, based that. I might be based.
Yeah, it's been sort of co-opted by the like younger people on the right.
Okay.
By saying, because as so many people have said, being conservative is the new counterculture. And so you're based in the sense that you're conservative, and openly being conservative is not caring what most people think because of how either annoying the left is or how dangerous it can be to be openly conservative. I mean, people are losing jobs and family members and friends and like other opportunities in their lives for being openly conservative. Right. So to be openly conservative, you have to not care what other people think.
Yeah. I used to refer to myself as libertarian, but then that stopped pissing off liberals as much as calling yourself a conservative.
Well, I like it because it pisses off everybody, you know, because like I'll sit there chatting about my conservative views and then I'll be like, but man, I wish they would legalize marijuana. And they're like, whoa, wait, what? It's like, no, you understand, man, liberty, everything should be legal.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Yes. Little did I know growing up in New Hampshire that was kind of the most libertarian.
Yeah. You know, live free or die, man. That's what it was. Yeah. And then Jean Shaheen came in and screwed that all up. But
she did.
That's another conversation for another day. Yeah. So, Tim, Jeff, thanks for coming on the show. And I wish you guys the best. And I'll be you know, checking you guys out.
Great. Where, thanks so much for having us.
Hey,
yes, no, thank you very much.
No problem. And stay safe. Don't get Antifa'd.
We'll do our best. All right. We'll see what happens.
All right. Take care, guys.
It's good for views, you know.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. A little blood, you know. Then you can literally put your blood, sweat, and tears into it.
Done and done.
All right. Take care, guys.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Bye.
Like us on facebook.com/WWIPodcast. And at WWI Podcast on Twitter. Drop us a line at waitswhatifpodcast@yahoo.com. Listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn Internet Radio.
We hope you enjoyed your listening experience. Now go forth and expand your reality.